very warm welcome back to the Daggers and Lids podcast. It has been a while, Daggers. We haven't been around for a few weeks. So this is going to be our season two. So we're going to kick things off for the second chapter of the Daggers and Lids podcast, which is very exciting. You've been gallivanting around America, which I'm looking forward to hearing about, Daggers. You've also got a new addition to the family, which is going to be exciting. I'm not too sure if it's exciting or it's quite unsettling with the sleep situation.
This is why I have these glasses, which hide the enormous bags under my eyes. Hi, Lids. It's great to see you, and it's great to be back on the podcast for the start of the second season. We have had a little bit of a break, and probably a timely break as well, given the end of the World T20. There was a nice little gap, even though, like, New Zealand had a day to celebrate their winning the World T20 because they had their games over in India. What was going on there? But from a personal standpoint, it has been a busy, busy month. Yes, we're on holiday. Holiday of a lifetime, I will have to say, because we wanted, myself and Ash and my partner, we wanted to go and tour America and do Route 66, which was basically from Chicago right down to the bottom of America and across over to LA. We did it in 2 weeks and we drove 3,000 miles. I drove 3,000 miles across America. And Lids, I tell you what, I cannot tell you. We could do, not that we will, don't worry, dear listener and viewer, but we could do an entire podcast on what I saw, what I experienced. Mm. It was, we had expectations of it being great, and it's our first proper holiday together, spending time with each other. Nothing could really sort of, I mean, it surpassed all expectations and more. What we saw, what we experienced, the memories that we've created, the sheer vastness of the country. I mean, we were a week in, and I don't know where the hell we were, probably somewhere like Albuquerque or something like that in New Mexico, and thinking that Chicago, when we landed, was like in the previous month. We'd done so much. So we took in, the route took us, we did our own version of Route 66, so we did a lot of the traditional journey and route, but we sort of made up a couple of things ourselves. So we ended up going from Chicago, driving to St. Louis. Then we went to Memphis. Oh, Lids, I could have stayed in Memphis. I could have just, I didn't want to come home.
Was that where the penguins were? Because my sister did that as well. And I saw that on your socials.
Peabody Hotel, where The Firm was filmed. It was Gene Hackman and Tom Cruise, the film The Firm, that was based in Memphis. A beautiful old building. And they parade ducks through the hotel at 11 o'clock and 5 o'clock, and they have a little fountain in the foyer, in the main foyer, and it's brilliant. They give a whole spiel. A guy in a sort of almost sort of red formal jacket sort of gives us a history of it, and it was absolutely brilliant. And then Beale Street, which is the main drag, the home of the blues, and so we ended up sitting in B.B. King's cafe, drinking and eating and watching a live three-piece at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, just groove. Nice. And I'll put some of this footage actually over the top for our YouTube viewers. I shall stick a few photos and videos on there and stuff, just to sort of illustrate what I'm talking about. I will stop talking about this holiday in a few seconds. And then we ended up going Little Rock to Oklahoma, Amarillo in Texas, where we stayed in the big Texan motel, hysterical. Albuquerque, onto Flagstaff in Arizona, which is beautiful. And then up to the Grand Canyon. Did the Grand Canyon, Vegas, Palm Springs, and then onto LA and Santa Monica. We finished the journey, and we were on Santa Monica Beach watching the sunset, and it was just the perfect ending. It really was very, very special and quite moving. Some of the stuff that we did and we saw was genuinely, it got into your soul. Going driving through the Mojave Desert to Palm Springs, where the views, the vistas were just incredible, and you felt like the only people on the planet. It's so vast, such amazing scenery. And at the Grand Canyon, nothing prepares you for it. So we got to the gates of Grand Canyon, And they said, $35, please. And we were like, oh, $35. okay. And Asha said to me, she said, well, we're here now. She was in the same opinion. So I was like, that's a bit steep, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then we drove in and then we parked up and then we sort of walked up. Lids, $35, didn't even
worth it.
I would have paid double, three times the amount to see what we saw. We just sat there or stood there in silence, marveling at the grandeur of this place. So great holiday. I will stop now. There you go. It was fantastic. And do you know what, Lids? It's given us hunger for more. We're going to do another one maybe next year or the year after or whenever, do a different part of America. So it was thrilling. It was absolutely thrilling. And I cannot recommend it highly enough to anybody. If you've got the time and if you have got the inclination, go and see it, because we saw something that we will never probably experience again. But it was a trip that completely opened my eyes to what was there. We were on during the election. We were there during the election. It was madness, absolute madness. Not necessarily on the street, actually. We were expecting sort of, you know, parades and rallies and all. No, not really. No one was really talking about it on the street, but it was all on telly and stuff like that. So, yes.
Well, it's good to have you back, Daggers.
It's good to be back.
Yeah,
And yes, we did pick, and then just to complicate our lives even further, 3 days after we got back, suffering from jet lag, we have picked up a new edition. Yes, we have. This, God knows why. I don't know why we've decided to complicate our lives even further. And I made sure that I absolutely knackered him out prior to coming on this podcast, but I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to wake him up because
he's sleeping.
He's sleeping. Come
here. Oh, he's down by your feet. And this is Blue, isn't it? Yes. I love the name, by the way.
This is
Blue. So, Golden Doodle. Hello, Blue.
He's a Labradoodle.
Look at him.
Really sleepy now, so I'm sorry about that.
Oh, look at him.
This is Blue the Labradoodle, who does pee and poo everywhere, it turns out.
Yeah, I can imagine. Oh my gosh.
There he is.
But worth it, though.
The podcast needed a dog, I think.
Yeah, we did.
So he's, there you go, buddy. So we have a new Labradoodle. Now he's going to be an absolute nightmare for the next 40 minutes, I imagine. Yes, we've got a Labradoodle. And now I'm back and settled and can chill out for the next, month and a half or something like that.
That's good.
Yes.
You've got time to train him and get him into
training. Trust
me. Good habits early, which is important.
He understands the word no, so that's good.
Well, there we go. That's the start. No, sit, walk. Right, should we talk about some cricket, Daggers?
Let's talk about some cricket. My apologies, I've prattled on there, but we've not seen each other in ages.
It's always good to have a catch-up. But yeah, as I mentioned at the start, there is a lot going on and we've got a lot to catch up on as well. So we're just going to sort of start with international cricket, just to sort of set the scene as to what's been going on around the world. You've already mentioned it, Daggers. I suppose that the thing that happened since our last podcast, or was just about to happen after the World Cup, was New Zealand, bless them, probably only just about recovering from their World Cup win celebrations, flew to India to complete their three ODIs, which were obviously part of the ICC Women's Championship. So they had to get them in a certain time frame. It was a really good series, actually. It was 1-1 going into the last game. And in the third ODI, New Zealand they set India 232 to chase down, which they were able to do, actually, thanks to a really good century from Smriti Mandana and a 59 not out from Indian skipper Harmanpreet Kaur. So India won that series 2-1. Worth mentioning that Brooke Halliday was leading run scorer in that series. So that's been really good good to see her trajectory. Easy for me to say in international cricket.
9 o'clock in the morning, Lid. 9 o'clock
in the
morning. We are both going to be in sort of like getting our mouths together. And it's my fault as well, because I asked to do it a little bit earlier.
It felt
a little bit of a shame. I knew these the one day internationals were coming up, but not many might have thought more would have thought that India would have been sort of suffering potentially a hangover because of the World T20, yeah. and due to the sort of semi-surprising nature that it was a New Zealand victory, if either had won, you would have felt, oh, come on, you know, it's the time to soak that up and actually celebrate a little bit. So I reckon a couple of the New Zealand players were probably a little dusty in that one day international series. But I just wonder, Lid, how much do you think that this World T20 win will actually give a sense of belief to not necessarily the Devines or the Bateses who are coming at the autumn of their career, but how much that might give the belief to the Brooke Hallidays, the Maddie Greens, that, you know, now Mealy Kerr, who's made that, who was player of the match, player of the series in the World T20, to go on and really actually kick on New Zealand cricket.
I think it's massive, because when you win a World Cup, suddenly your shoulders are back a little bit further. You have that extra belief within yourself. The way that you carry yourself, naturally, you're more confident, because once you've done something like that, you can just, you then know how to do it. So, and for New Zealand and actually South Africa, which sadly for South Africa, they're still chasing it, but it's all about having that belief that they can do it when it really counts. So I think for New Zealand, that will help them immensely moving forwards, as you say, more so with the sort of younger core players that they've got in their side. And obviously Ben Sawyer as well, who's the head coach. He can finally think, okay, I have actually been doing something right. Because they had a tricky time, didn't they, leading into that World Cup. That was the first series that obviously took place after the World Cup. There's been a few other things going on. The Pakistan contracts have been announced. Mm-hmm. And the big headline from that, and I think there's probably a little bit more to it, Daggers. I don't know what you think, but Nida Dar, the former Pakistan captain, and Alia Riaz have been omitted from the contract list of Pakistan. Obviously, Fatema Sana has taken over as captain. I don't know how much say she would have in that contracting process. I would imagine not a huge amount. But when you see a big name like Nida Dar not having a contract, surely there's more to it than that. What do you think, Daggers?
Well, now we go into the realms of Pakistan cricket. Now, the thing is, what we do have is kind of a history. And that's not necessarily from the women's point, but from the men's point. And you look at the state of flux that the men's game has been in for Pakistan, and through the corridors of power, and they're constantly going through head coaches. They're constantly changing captains. They seem to have changes at the top, and chairmen and the committees and all of this sort of stuff. And it seems like their cricket sort of is almost aligned to how things are off the field than they are on the field. They can be brilliant at one moment and god-awful the next. And there is obviously a lot of internal politics within Pakistan cricket. My hope was that kind of the women's game could actually just sort of be separated from that, and they just sort of do their own thing. Obviously, it's not. And it's surprising. Pakistan needs its Alia Riazes. It needs its leaders. It needs it's not a good side at this moment in time. How do you bring... And look, I don't know about the internal struggles or the internal dynamics of the Pakistan side, but what I think they need as a side is everybody singing from the same hymn sheet, because if you don't have that, if you have a team in a state of flux anyway and you're actually not that good, then you are really going to be troubled when you hit international competition. They have moments. We know the standard of Pakistan cricket and the women's game is not great. We did know that the women's PSL was a couple of years back on the horizon with Ramiz Raja in charge. A change in the top within Pakistan cricket. I think it was maybe Shahid Afridi. And Ramiz Raja is out, and the PSL, the women's PSL, is shelved again. So, you know, until they get something concrete up and running, then how are you going to blood young players? How are you going to get and play against top players in a franchise competition? Until you do that and get your domestic players playing against international quality overseas players, you're not going to progress. So Pakistan needs, I feel, its superstars within its ranks to have that higher quality in international cricket. But yeah. I'm speaking of something I don't know. I don't know the internal workings.
No, I agree with that. I think it's hard for us to pass too much opinion when we're not in there and we don't know the ins and outs. But I think that's a fair shout to surmise and give an idea of Pakistan cricket as a whole and how they operate. But it's interesting. I did see a tweet from Sanamir, former captain, who I've got so much time for. She is anything Pakistan cricket. She's got integrity. She looks after the younger players coming through. She's been a mentor for Fatima Sana. She tweeted and she said, "How can Nida Dar and Ali Riaz not find a place in the contracts when a 50-over qualifier is coming up in February and a potential 50-over World Cup in October next year? Extremely disappointed, but not surprised at all. The decisions are being taken by people with limited knowledge of the women's game." So that probably sums things up. And as I say, Sanamir is a really good sounding board, I think, when it comes to, you know, giving an indicator of where things are at. So we'll see how that unfolds. Maybe they might be get recalled, but time will tell on that one. Well, as Sanamir mentioned there, she did mention the ICC Women's Championship. And that links in nicely to our next topic, which is the Future Tours
programme. You can tell you're in charge this week. Instead of me being sort of like going from one thing to another thing, oh, I forgot about this and I forgot about that. Everything's beautifully organised when you're in charge.
Well,
I love it.
No, I'm not sure about that. But yeah, the Future Tours programme has been announced. So that's for the 2025 to 2029. And it's the fourth edition that this cycle's come out. Obviously, it's based around the ICC Women's Championships fixtures, where each team plays four home and four away series. The good news is that it's been expanded from 10 teams to 11 teams. So Zimbabwe are the team who will be that 11th side making up those fixtures. But the thing that I wanted to get your opinion on, Daggers, was something I think we talk about this topic probably every 6 months or so. And that is to do with within that fixture list that's come out, there's notably more test matches for more sides. So Australia and England, that's a given. They're always going to play test matches. India, more so these days as well. But also South Africa and the West Indies. The West Indies is probably that newer name to be joining teams. But still no tests for New Zealand. So what do you think? What do you think about test matches in the women's game? Is there a place for them? Should there be a place for them? Your opinions.
Well, I think we are going to agree but slightly disagree in a variety. And I see where you're coming from. Look, I'm seeing it as a fan of the women's game. I love them. I absolutely love them. Because, yes, we don't see many of them. We see the cricket in a different way, different skills that are required. And I love seeing that about players. How do you adapt? I love seeing players adapt to the longer format, whether they adapt to it quickly or not. What skills do they have within that? Do they have the patience? Can they work a batter out, or can they bowl a long spell? Now, I like that. That's just me. I would have, and I've said this on numerous occasions, I would have every series would be a one-day series, a three-match, like the multi-format, three ODIs, three T20s.
For the Ashes.
I also kind of know what you're going to say, and I don't disagree. is that there is very little long form domestic cricket, and there's very little long form cricket for them, for any side. And I include England and Australia and those who are playing more test matches now. There's very little opportunity, but to sort of get used to that format and to train in that particular way. Oddly, I quite like the jeopardy of that. And the fact that, you know, 50 over cricket, you know, allows you or allows batters to play longer innings. You know, you can spend a great deal of time at the crease and you know, and bowlers can bowl slightly longer spells than in T20 cricket. But I do quite like it because everyone's in the same boat a little bit.
Yeah.
But I would like to see, you know, if England are playing two test matches a year or India, are, you know, they are starting to get used to that and understand what their best test team is or tactical. And if you're playing against the West Indies, say, for argument's sake, who haven't played, or if you play one against Bangladesh or whoever it may be, New Zealand, for that matter, poor Susie Bates and Sophie Devine, I don't think are ever going to be able to play a test match, even though they're desperate to. I also think you listen to the players too, and they want to play test match cricket, but, you know, I'm not in the corridors of power. So I kind of like the jeopardy. Where do you stand?
Yeah, I completely understand what you're saying, but I do sit the other side of the fence with this one. I think it exposes players in terms of in a format that is regarded as the hardest and the toughest format to play in cricket. They don't get the opportunity to play domestically, but suddenly boards are saying, well, off you go and play test match at Trent Bridge, the MCG, we'll try and get a big crowd in for you. We'll even send down the TV cameras. And then in a way, they're being set up to fail, but that's actually not my biggest concern. My biggest concern is it's taking away time and resource into boards growing and supporting their players better when it comes to white ball cricket. Because if you look at the West Indies, South Africa, New Zealand, all of them could have better structures when it comes to their white ball domestic structure.
Yes.
So my feeling, and this might be completely wrong, I think there's too much sentiment when it comes to the women's game playing test matches. I think actually focus on growing the white ball game first and get it to top notch. Get all the other teams up on par with England, India, Australia. And you know, domestically, if you do eventually want to play test match cricket and do it properly rather than the one-off test match here and there, build it into your domestic structure and allow the players to be better equipped. But yeah, as a player, I would have said, yeah, of course I'd love to play a test match, but I think I've got a bit of a broader view on it now.
I get your point. I think, but are these two sort of separate problems? In that, of course we want domestic cricket around the world and to have domestic structures such as, you know, we look at England and Australia. We want to have a better domestic structure in the places that don't necessarily outside of the big three, really. Yeah. Only the big three have got franchise tournaments. Like of note, I realise the Super Smash is over in New Zealand, but it doesn't pay anything, and you know you're not going to a whole host of big name overseas players going to play in it. And yes, I understand that, but is playing one test match necessarily going to take that much funding away from a domestic structure which needs a lot of funding? And that's what you're actually talking about. And I agree, build up the white ball centre, because the white ball thing is, I think test matches is, you know, there's not going to be a World Test Championship. They're just a bit of, you know, I think they're fun. I actually think they're fun. And I think financially, I don't know if, you know, not playing one test match is actually going to be able to format a proper domestic structure.
Yeah.
You're talking a lot of money to do that. I would love New Zealand, West Indies and Bangladesh and Pakistan to have far greater domestic structures so that there is a great pathway for young women players to be sort of competing at a higher level with the Englands and the Indias and the Australias. But is a test match or not playing a test match, is that necessarily going to finance the domestic side of things, which is going to take a big deal. It's going to take a lot of money to do so, and should be done, and the money should be there.
Yeah. No, that's a fair point. I guess the only thing you could say is, could that window in the international tour of the Test match and maybe even the build up for the Test match be used to play more white ball cricket for those teams who actually need to get better? But I completely understand where you're coming from, Daggers. And it will be something that will come up in 6 months' time, which we will chat about again, I'm sure.
Maybe even more regularly than that. If you've got an opinion on this, if you have got an opinion about Test Match, maybe get in touch with us. We will never say we are right or wrong on this particular... Well, I don't know. Well, on a couple of topics, I might say right. But get in touch with us. You can get in touch with us. Leave comments in the section underneath the YouTube. Underneath our YouTube video, if you want to leave comments on there, you are more than welcome to. We'll actually get to a couple of comments and stuff that has been left in the past, and we do see them. We might not have picked up on many of them, but please do leave your comments. If you've got questions, get in touch with us. You can email daggersandlids@outlook.com. You can get in touch with us via social media at Charles Dagnall, at Lydia Greenway. By the way, I've joined Blue Sky as well.
Oh, yeah, I've gone there as well.
Have you? I didn't even tell me.
Oh, right, I haven't told anyone yet. I've just signed myself up. Yeah.
I'll follow you. And maybe we'll even get Daggers and Lids Blue Sky account. But for the moment, Charles Dagnall, Lydia Greenway on social media channels. Get in touch with us. Tell us what you think about Test cricket.
Yes, absolutely. We do want to know people's opinions. Okay, so that's the Future Tours programme. We've sort of moved closer to home now. So England are obviously in South Africa. I think they flew out there at the weekend. And they are out there for three T20s, three ODIs, and then the Test match. So the first T20 kicks off on Sunday the 24th in East London. Then obviously the ODI series, and then they finish in Bloemfontein, where we've both been before, Daggers, to do a bit of commentary. They've got the Test match in Bloemfontein, so that is how that series is shaping up. In terms of squad news for the both sides, South Africa, their biggest news is that they're resting Marizane Kapp and Ayabonga Kaka for the T20 series, which I think is pretty understandable with the workload that they've had recently. The England squad news, in no particular order, is that Paige Schofield has been called up to the T20 squad. And I always forget that there was the series in September against Ireland. So she has actually already been in and around the England side, but she's been recalled.
Let me stop you, because 12 minutes ago, I've just seen this on Crick Info. Valkyrie Baines has just said that Paige Schofield is ruled out of England's South Africa tour with an ankle injury. I'm just reading this from Valkyrie. It says South Africa-born batter will head back to England after she was hurt during training. She hurt her ankle in training on Tuesday and following further assessment on Wednesday morning withdrew from the T20 international squad to return to the UK and begin her rehabilitation. So there you go. This is sort of breaking news.
What
it
a
just
shame.
Happened 12
yeah.
minutes ago.
That is such a shame, isn't it? Her. No, because such she, when you look at what you want an England player to look like, she is that person. She fits everything, doesn't she? So that's a real shame for Paige. So obviously wishing her a speedy recovery. Another name that people will be pleased to see, she's been named in all three squads actually, is Lauren Filer. She obviously missed out on the T20 World Cup squad, which I think people felt quite strongly that she should have been there. So she's going to get an opportunity. There's going to be no Danny Gibson due to a left knee injury that she picked up during the T20 World Cup. She's since had an operation on that, so she'll be recovering. And then the big news, which I wanted to spend a bit of time chatting about, Daggers, and just getting your thoughts on it, was the fact that Alice Capsey, well, she was initially dropped from the T20 squad.
Yep.
But on Monday this week, we're recording on Wednesday the 20th, so Monday the 18th, she has since been recalled to the squad. So if you want to chat about Alice Capsey, go for it, Daggers, because, I mean, What are your thoughts on that decision as a whole and from a bigger picture point of view?
It's a tough one because, let's be right, at this, she is primarily in there for her batting, right? Mm. And, you know, the fact that she does bowl and has actually had a pretty reasonable WBBL with the ball, I think that's one of those bonus things. She is primarily one of your top batters.
Yeah.
She had a shocker in the World T20. She has not scored a run in the WBBL either, and is really struggling for form at the moment. And look, it's an interesting one. She has, it seems sort of, like many players, peaks and troughs, but those troughs seem to be quite lengthy at this moment in time. And I just wonder if there needs to be a little bit of a reset with Alice Capsey. Look, the way that she burst out, I'm not doubting her talent. Oh my God, no.
Yeah.
No, I think she could, I actually think she could be one of the best players in the world. Given the shots that she has at her disposal, the ability to manipulate the ball, the power she possesses. You know, she had a pretty decent WPL. But in international cricket, the figures don't lie. I'm afraid you're as good as your stats say you are. So I think, and look, I realise she's had one or two injury things to, I mean, albeit that was a little while ago with the shoulder, etc. But I don't know if she knows what her role is at this moment in time. And I think, you know, a bit of time out of the squad is not such a bad thing. You know,
yeah.
I think it resets the mind. I think it resets, you know, what do you want out? You know, she's a young cricketer. She's still very, very young. It's easy to forget that. She's been on the scene for quite some time. And you're still developing. You're still finding out about yourself. And I think time out of the squad is quite a good thing. Now she's been brought back into the squad and necessity dictates that. And of course, she's the sort of next cab on the rank. But I just wonder, if she knows where she is with her international standing. What do you think?
Yeah, I have to admit, I agree with everything that you said. I think my worry with Alice Capsey, and without being self-indulgent, I can completely relate to her, because when you get picked for England at a young age, what was she, 16, 17?
Yes,
I was 17 when I got picked for England. And everything comes at you. People are talking about you, saying you're the next best thing since sliced bread. You're getting so much praise from everyone around you. You're doing really well because that's how you got picked for England to start with, and that continues. And I think you can lose sight, as you say, of the type of cricketer that you want to be. And actually, you can fall into the trap of maybe not training as hard, maybe not thinking, how can I get better? What can I do physically and mentally to take my game to the next level? And I feel, this might be wrong, but I feel Alice Capsey has got to a point where she maybe isn't challenging herself enough as a cricketer, because things have come so easily. And I'm actually a bit frustrated with England's decision calling her back up, because I think they're going to lose the benefit of what dropping her will bring. And even when I saw her name in the ODI squad, I just thought, leave her out for the whole series and let her go away and think about, okay, I need to sort of sort myself out here a bit. And I'm with you, Daggers. She is the most talented cricketer that we've got in England in terms of young, exciting cricketers. But if we're not getting the best out of her, then something needs to be done. And I don't think calling her back up to the T20 squad is the best thing for her. There's other names that could have been called up. So, yeah, for her sake, I hope that she, you know, does well.
I think that, and look, and this happens with young players, and we've got the benefit of, you know, being on, you might hear a squeaky thing, by the way, in the back. That's Blue playing with the toy.
Blue's woken up.
So my apologies. But I think there is a lot to be said for leaving players out and almost sort of missing that atmosphere that I'm sure she'll enjoy within the team group and the team dynamic, and sort of saying, what do I actually want to be as a cricketer? You know, I can relate in a much lesser sense, not international cricket, but from a domestic standpoint. I sort of, and this was because I started later, 24, 25 years old, and I sort of felt like I was nowhere. And I what do you want to be? What do you want to be the best player in the world? Because you can be, and she can be. She can be the best player in the world. With the bat, and is what I'm talking about. But you know, how do you want to go about that? Is your mind right for it? Are you going to potentially be dedicated enough to make the changes that you might potentially need to do, or are you just going to go on this sort of on this path of frustration for probably yourself and for those watching, knowing how good she can be? So I agree with you. I think actually some time out of the side might have been, as I say, a reset. But, you know, England have brought her back in. They, of course, want to win. And look, if Alice Capsey is within your side and you get the Alice Capsey that we know she can be, you stand a far greater chance. But there are others knocking on the door as well. And you know, I think how much – it's not your shirt. And I think that's I'm not saying that about her. I'm saying that about all cricketers. It's not necessarily your shirt. You're just borrowing it for a bit. And it's up to you to make sure that you keep hold of it. So
we shall wait and see. Yeah, we will, and hopefully, she'll be able to find a way just to get herself back into form. That all kicks off this Sunday, so that will be good. They're all pretty sociable times as well for us in England,
very
so
nice.
We'll be able to follow them. Yeah, absolutely. Right, we keep moving on because, as I say, there's so much to get through. We'll just turn our attention now to domestic cricket here in England. Now, there have been a lot of things going on amongst the counties. Daggers, I don't know how you do this every week because you're normally the one keeping tabs on it. And literally, I've spent the last 2 days trying to keep up with what's been happening. But I will whiz through it. Daggers, jump in if there's anything that you want to touch on. But there is something we want to talk about at the end, so we need to save a bit of time for that. So big news, actually, is for Surrey. They've been able to sign Danny Wyatt-Hodge, which, out of all the signings we've seen, that's probably the biggest headline. She'll obviously be making the move from what was Southern Vipers, now Hampshire. So that's a great one for Surrey. Obviously disappointing for Hampshire. But on the Hampshire front, as you would expect, Charlotte Edwards and Georgia Adams have been named as head coach and captain. I think people would have thought that would have been the case. They've also retained the core of that Southern Vipers squad: Lauren Bell, Freya Kemp, Maya Boucher and Lindsay Smith. Their most recent signing has been Naomi Dattani, left-handed batter who played for the Southern Brave in the 100. It's been reported that Charlie Deem, who it was announced that she's leaving the club, the Cricketer magazine reported that she might be joining Somerset, but I haven't found anywhere where that's been confirmed. You might have seen it somewhere, Daggers, but I haven't seen it. You've been in America, so there we go. Yes. You've got a good excuse.
I wasn't checking the Somerset website in Amarillo. Let me tell you.
Wasn't on your list of priorities. Turning our attention to Essex, so they've announced Andy Tennant as their team director and Danny Warren as performance director. Darren Stevens, assistant coach, Jason Gallion and Carla Rudd have been brought in as coach consultants. And where else have we got? Somerset. We'll go back to Somerset. They've signed Fran Wilson, Chloe Skelton, Molly Robbins, Lola Harris, Amelie Munday, Rebecca Odgers, Katie Jones and Erin Vukasic. Is that right? Is that the right pronunciation? Who knows? Apologies if it's not. We're finished further north. So Warwickshire have announced Ali Maiden as their head coach. A lot of people remember him. He was the assistant coach of the England side when Mark Robinson was in charge. Amy Jones has moved from the Blaze, from Warwickshire to the Blaze. And Davina Perrin, you'll be pleased with that one, has been announced as one of their players moving forwards. Durham have signed Scottish international Catherine Fraser. Phoebe Turner also on a 2-year deal. And then rookie contracts for Abby Glenn, Sophia Turner and Trudy Johnson. And then lastly, Yorkshire and Lancashire have both been pretty busy. I'll just pick out the headline signings. For Yorkshire, Maddie Ward, you'll be pleased with that one. Daggers, the under 19 wicketkeeper batter, she's signed a 2-year rookie contract. Rhea Fackrell has signed a 3-year deal. That's a decent signing to get a player for that long. Rebecca Duckworth, a 2-year deal. Amy Campbell and Beth Langston. And then yesterday, Lancashire named their 21-person squad, who you will be pleased. I'm not going to name all of them, but I will just mention they've kept the core of their side. Ellie Threlkeld will captain the side. Familiar names, Kate Cross, Sophie Eccleston, Mahika Gore, Darcy Carter, actually, and Elsa Lister, the two Scottish internationals, have also been signed. Liberty Heat, another under-19 England player, and Saren Smale. And then they've got Fee Morris and Tara Norris, who have spent some time up there. There we go. Hopefully
see,
that didn't take too long.
It's not easy, is it?
It isn't easy. I'm glad I can pass it on to you next week, although they're all done now, aren't they?
They're all done. No, it was Lancashire just doing the big unveiling, which I kind of like. I know we were sort of like, not we weren't frustrated, because we just wanted to know, that's all. But I like the fact that they unveiled them in that way to give them a bit of a big build-up and to sort of, get out the fact that they've got the tier one and just give it its due announcement. And I like the way that they did that. Still think they're struggling on for batting, but that's always seems to be the way. That's not to say they can't get an overseas player in and strengthen it that way. I'm sorry about the absolute cacophony that's going on in the background. As Blue.
There we go. He's off. He's woken up.
Yeah, he's woken up and he's going absolutely nuts. He's got one of my Diet Coke bottles, which I've given him to play for. All the dog owners say, you shouldn't give him that, but he's fine. So I've got an eye on him and he's going nuts. But no, well done you. Very good.
Yeah, well, we got there in the end. Just to finish off before we move on to our last topic, it was the Business of Cricket Awards recently, which I know you were at, Daggers, but Jasmine Nicholls was she picked up the Rising Star Award. She was the first female to prepare a pitch at Headingley earlier this year. And it's worth noting, in the turf industry, there's only 2% of females who represent the workforce. So it's really important that females get that opportunity. So well done to Jasmine. Right, let's move on now, Daggers, to the news of the ECB.
I was there at the Business of Cricket Award. Jasmine wasn't. She wasn't there to pick up her award. But I digress. She obviously had some. She was probably busy preparing stuff. But congratulations. Congratulations to her nonetheless. My apologies.
let's finish off with news from the ECB. So this has been a really, well, it's firstly a really sensitive subject, but also a really divisive one. And the ECB, it was in October, they announced their updated transgender policy. And as we know, across all sports, it's a circumstance which I suppose all boards are trying to navigate their way through to get the best solution possible. But as it stands, what the ECB have done, they've aligned their policy with the ICC. So what that looks like for us here in England is that any player who has gone through male puberty will not be eligible to feature in the top two tiers of the women's game. And that also applies to the 100. So a red flag there. But then where it doesn't apply, they will be eligible to play in tier three domestic cricket. So that's the lower level county cricket and also recreational cricket. What the ECB have said on this is, having considered wide ranging views gathered during the consultation, as well as in consultations conducted during 2023 and the relevant science and medical evidence, the ECB has decided that from 2025, it will adopt the same approach as the ICC for the women's professional domestic cricket. This provides consistency, given that a primary purpose of the top end of domestic structure is to produce international players. Previous to this policy coming out, the ECB required all transgender women looking to take part in elite level female-only competitions to apply for written clearance. Evidence was then reviewed on a case-by-case basis. So they've effectively brought in a rule that is a blanket one, really. It covers everything. As I say, it's a tough topic to discuss because it is so divisive. But I just wonder, Daggers, what you think of the process that the ECB have gone through and if you think they've got it quite right. The ICC said they will review their policy in 2 years' time. So be interesting to see what the ECB do with that.
It is a sensitive topic. And it is hugely divisive. And what we can see, sadly, on social media is people taking things to the nth extreme. They're taking maybe a couple of examples. We saw it in the Olympics recently, especially in the boxing. We've seen how much it can pull people apart. It's the definition of a no-win scenario for the ECB when you're making any decision like that. Go too far one way, you get flack from one side. You go too far the other way, you get flack from the other. So it's an inordinately difficult decision to put out some outlines. And if it's a little bit sort of, half and half and a bit too sort of beige in certain areas, it doesn't go far enough for some, doesn't go far enough for the other, for the other side. So it is a no-win situation. I think they've done, following on from what the ICC have done, I think is probably fair. And I maintain, this is not an issue which, in a sense, I am, sort of have first-hand knowledge of. And that's because I play men's cricket and I am a man. And, now it does affect the women's game and women's sports. And the problem is that what we see, and the amounts of transgender cricketers that there are, we're talking a minuscule amount of players who identify as transgender or identify as woman. And this, what then people tend to do is take it to the nth degree. Right, to the furthest possible sort of end of the spectrum. Well, what if, you've got a hulking great bloke who has been a bloke for 20 years and then wants to identify as a woman and bowls 90 miles an hour and is going to kill someone? That's what one side wants to do, and we're not going to see that. I always maintain everybody should be able to play cricket. I don't care what you are. I don't care how you define yourself from a gender perspective, from a race, it doesn't matter. Religion, everything. It's a game. It's a game of cricket, everyone should be welcome. And I know that's what you think as well. The problem, in a sense, is it's a little bit frustrating having covered the women's game for as long as I have now. What is it, 14 years or something like that? You've been involved, obviously, from a very young age, but from what I have seen, and I have seen women fight and claw and sort of just try and get the talent and the exposure of the women's game. They've tried to fight for absolutely everything that they have got so far and have not finished. And I could foresee women who have been in this situation, like you have, to get professionalism, to get really great domestic structures, to actually value the talent that they have within the game of cricket. Women have fought hard to get what they want, and they still continue to do so, to be on the same level as men in the game. And so when that could potentially down the line be, in inverted commas, invaded, I can see why that some would be upset by it. And I can completely understand it. And it's a very difficult situation. It's pointless me talking in a weird way. You're in women's sports. You've been involved in women's sports for a long time. How do you see these decisions?
Yeah, I think I see it from two points of view, really. I think if I was the ECB, I think they need to ask themselves two questions. I think the first one is, does our policy prioritise the safety of female players within the game? Yeah. And that, for me, first and foremost, should be the most important thing. I know they've referred to creating international players, which obviously applies to the top tiers and hundreds cricket. And if they can answer that question and say, yes, they have, then fine. But if the answer is actually, maybe we haven't here, then they should maybe consider rethinking about how they do it. But as you say, and this is my second point, the problem is that because there are so few transgender females wanting to play cricket, it's so important that that group of people have a place to play the game that we love. Right. There is no, who are we to say you can't play cricket? And so we're in a bit of a grey area now where governing bodies should be planning ahead and thinking, okay, well, how, if it isn't safe for them to be playing in tier three and recreational cricket, then how can we create a space that allows them to still play cricket without perhaps jeopardising the safety of players? We don't know how this is going to play out. So I think for the ECB, they have to ask themselves those two questions and try and plan ahead as to what could be happening next. But I'm with you, Daggers. Everyone should have the opportunity to play any sport that they want. But the safety of players does have to be at the forefront, I think, of those decisions. So it's always tough, it is. for the governing bodies. But
I mean, there's two sort of safety aspects, I think, as well. And I wish I knew more about this. I've tried to read up. I've tried to learn. I'm sure a lot of people are in that boat. But the safety aspect on two fronts, on and off the field. Now, there's a lot of discussion at the moment about women's spaces and the sort of safety and sanctuary of that. And we see it on social media. We see the extremes and we see it, people butting heads and the like. Safety and women's safety in off the field, within changing rooms, dressing rooms, bathrooms, et cetera, yeah. This is something that they have to feel, women have to feel safe in their space. Not only that, there is a safety aspect on the field as well, that if someone has gone through male puberty, I mean, we're talking down the line, it's going to be redone in a couple of years' time or looked at in a couple of years' time. But I'm sorry, you look at the physical attributes of some of the transgender community, and I wouldn't, men are bigger, they are stronger, they hit the ball completely differently, and bowl the ball completely differently, and there's that aspect as well. So I think the ECB have done all they can, and this is not me towing the line for the ECB, they've got nothing to do with our podcast or nothing to do with me. And it's exactly the same with you. I think they've sort of seen what's happening. They've seen, they've taken some decisions. I mean, I don't see why tier three and recreational cricket is slightly different than if you're going to make one rule, why don't you blanket it all? But again, I don't know. It seems
odd to me. As you say, there's so much information out there. I think it's always hard to we can be as well researched as we can be, but I think it's such a new thing that this is always going to evolve, so we're
the only way of dealing with issues is to keep talking, but talking with level heads and not extreme it's sort of like the extremists. We just keep talking, that's all we can do.
Absolutely. Well put, Daggers. Right, we are pretty much at the end. Just a quick note on the WBBL. It is all to play for, actually. It's been such a tight competition this year. We are going to hopefully get Mel Jones on, who is a very busy bee at the moment, just to talk to us in a bit more detail. But there's teams in the running. So Sydney Thunder atop. They've actually literally just beaten the Melbourne Stars. So to my calculations, I think they are the first team to qualify. Melbourne Renegades, Brisbane Heat, Hobart Hurricanes, the Scorchers and just about the Sydney Sixers are all still in the mix. So there's a couple of games to go for everyone. So we won't know that those top teams until by the end of the tournament, you would imagine, or by the end of the group stages at least. A few things to note. Lizelle Lee back-to-back hundreds for the Hobart Hurricanes, which is good to see. Elise Perry has been in brilliant form. She's the second leading run scorer after Lizelle Lee, 324 runs. Beth Mooney, as ever, third leading run scorer. And then wickets wise, it's been the spinners who have dominated. Sam Bates of Sydney Thunder, 18 wickets for her. She might have picked up a few today, actually. Alana King, 17, and Alice Capsey, 13 wickets. And just to finish with, because we always like looking at younger players coming through, Lucy Hamilton, the 18-year-old of Brisbane Heat, picked up the best ever figures in the WBBL, 5 for 8 against the Melbourne Stars. Before that game, she'd never picked up a WBBL wicket, but her wickets included Yasika Bhatia, Annabelle Sutherland, Meg Lanning, Tess Flintoff and Dipti Sharma. So not some bad sculpts to have in your ranks in terms of first wickets in WBBL. That is us today. We've obviously got some series that we're going to be keeping an eye on. The South Africa and England one. Bangladesh will be taking on Ireland and Australia will be taking on India later in the month. So we will be keeping an eye on those. And as you say, Daggers, we do read the YouTube channel comments, and actually a lot of the comments I love reading because some of them really do make me chuckle. Any comments that you've got, what's that?
They make me giggle as well. They're absolutely great. Please keep them coming.
Yeah, please do, because we do enjoy reading them. And that is it for us, Daggers. Blue has woken up, so this is very good timing. It looks like he's going to need a warm
bloody pain for the last half an hour. And so he probably wants to go out and have some exercise. Ow.
Well, yes. as ever, thank you, Daggers. It's been so good to have you back. Welcome home and welcome to the podcast family, Blue. And thank you, listeners, as well for listening to us and tuning in. We do appreciate it and we'll speak to you soon.